The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 7th of April, 2020. On the podcast today, Nassim Amin, Executive Chairman of Arix Bioscience, A-R-I-X ticker there, and Nassim discusses the changes to the Board of Directors and Executive Leadership Team. We also discuss strategy and progress at the company. Plus, Glenn Goodman, former ITB News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's markets, gold and Bitcoin moves. Plus, as always, I have two very important lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, if you want to check out the top 10 lists of these lists, you can see them at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see a lot of content, articles from SP Angel, articles on Northbridge returns to pre-tax profit, first time since 2014. Elicosoft, strong full-year results. SDX article there, production. Lots, 18 Energy as well. So check those out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nassim Amin, Executive Chairman of Arix Biosciences, A-R-I-X ticker. Nassim, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
No problem. Now, there's been a bit of change in the RNS you've announced recently, a change in board of directors and executive leadership. We'll get into that and some other questions in a bit. Before we do, Nassim, for people not familiar with Arix Bioscience, can you just give us a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Sure. Arix Bioscience is a fairly unique and distinct global venture capital firm. We are listed on the London Stock Exchange, and what that does is allows investors to get access to leading edge biotechnology and life science opportunities mm-hmm. to invest in a broad range of companies. What we do is we act as a specialist investor, a venture capital firm, in building breakthrough biotech companies, and we do that across the world. We have a strong presence in the US, the UK, and in Europe through our management team. We collaborate with the very exceptional scientists and entrepreneurs. We provide them capital, we provide them with management expertise, and we help them accelerate their ideas into new treatments for patients. At the end of the day, that's what we're here for. I think in this current environment, that's even more pertinent and more in people's minds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it seems like everyone at the moment is desperately searching for some kind of solution, some kind of vaccine for COVID-19. So, okay, let's talk about your background. Where have you come from to be where you are today then, Nassim?
Well, I have a little bit of an eclectic background. I'm a medical doctor by training. I trained here in London. I spent 5 years in the NHS as a medical doctor and in nephrology. And before I headed over to the U.S. and spent 20 years in the U.S., I joined the leading medical device and biotech companies. I was Baxter Healthcare, Genzyme, and Biogen IDEC, both in Chicago and Boston. And I had a variety of roles, very broad, from marketing, commercial, R&D, mergers, acquisitions, licensing new technologies. And then back in 2010, we came back to the UK and I became the chief science officer of a FTSE 100 medical technology company called Smith & Nephew. Mm-hmm. Did that for 5 years and then joined the venture capital industry here in London for 5 years at a firm called Advent Life Sciences, and again, building great companies. I joined Arix in December as a board member, and then very recently took over as executive chairman.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so first of all, tell us why there's been some changes to the board of directors and executive leadership, please.
I think we've put two main reasons. I think one, as we looked at our portfolio, you know, we have been investing over the last 4 or 5 years and building what we believe is an exceptional portfolio of companies. And, you know, the heavy lifting is done in when you are building the companies, finding them, bringing the management together and building those companies. And now we're in a phase over the next couple of years where we expect some of those companies to reach a, what we would call a value inflection point. They have, you know, data that proves their hypothesis. And usually in those situations, there are a couple of things that happen. Some of those companies go public and remain independent. Some of those get acquired. And some of them get investments into them from big pharmaceutical companies where they don't need capital and less involvement from us. In this current environment of constrained capital, we are all trying to manage the best way we can. And that's why we made the changes we did. We said we don't need such a broad executive team to support these companies over the next 2-3 years. We can't justify our cost structure to our shareholders because of that. And certainly over the next 2 years, we felt that focusing our board in a smaller board, frankly also reducing our operating expenses around the board, were important things we could do so that we can preserve the capital to support our existing companies that will need capital moving forward. And by making these changes, we have achieved that goal. We feel that we have a very good runway to support our existing companies over the next 2 to 3 years without needing to go to the capital markets. Those were the reasons. So anytime you make changes with and colleagues and friends leave the company is very difficult, but it was something we needed to do. Our first obligation is to our shareholders and the companies and people who are developing great breakthrough products. And that was done. We don't see any further requirements for restructuring. And, what we also try to do is not to fundamentally lose our ability to reinvest in next generation of great companies when the market environment changes. And so we've kept our U.S. presence, we've kept our UK presence, and we have our executives in residence who are looking at building great companies, and they've already, one or two companies have come out from those individuals. So that's what we've retained. And we've tried to minimize the damage in terms of, headcount and keep the bench strength. So when we come out of this challenging environment, we're ready and can deploy capital in companies. And I'm very bullish on the future. I mean, I think, one of the pressure headwinds we've all faced is, there has been a lot of negative publicity in the pharmaceutical, biotech, diagnostic industry. And I think we're realizing right now that those are critical. In existential times we live in right now, those are critical. And, and the industry I'm very proud of is responding. We are seeing things like vaccines coming in record time to patients. Where the diagnostic test industry has stepped up to the plate. The medical device industry is stepping up to the plate. And I think it reminds us how critical technology is to the well-being of everyone's health and well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, obviously, a bit of change there. So, what are the cost-saving benefits and implications here, then, Nassim?
Well, it gives us runway, we believe, over the next 2 to 3 years to be able to really support our existing portfolio without having to go to the capital markets. And that was very important for us.
Yeah, and you sort of touched on it, but has there been a change at all in the strategy?
No. I think the fundamental strategy remains, which is to remain a global venture capital firm. We have the team to do that, and we have the capital to support the great companies we've invested in.
Yeah. Okay. And it's all around us at the moment, COVID-19. What's the potential impact on Arix specifically?
Look, I think our portfolio companies are obviously starting new trials. Clinical trials is going to be more challenging in this environment. And having them get access to capital is also important. We've looked at our portfolio companies, and we're very fortunate that we have very good syndicate partners, and we don't see any of our companies having a capital shortage issue. And the actions we've taken have made sure that we meet our obligations. We don't invest individually in these companies. We syndicate, and we feel these companies are well supported.
Yeah, absolutely. And either as a company, or you know, specifically as a portfolio companies, what's the next sort of milestones you're hoping to achieve here?
Well, we've got, you know, I think over 20 milestones over the next 18 months in these portfolio companies, and there are too many to go into. But you know, some of them have really exciting products in that will have readouts in the disease, in the patients that they've spent many years developing. So we're excited over the next 18 months on our portfolio companies, and a number of them will have significant readouts on late-stage clinical trials.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Nassim, as always on the podcast, I like to highlight the top five most followed companies. Get on that list. People must hit that follow button. So for people listening right now who likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
The novel leading and cutting-edge technologies in biotechnology and life sciences is a very exciting place to be. The last century, I think, could be argued was a digital century. This century is a century for biotechnology. And for the general investor out there, getting access to companies like this is extremely difficult. They're usually reserved for private investors. In the private VC world, we are a fairly unique vehicle that people can access these kind of technologies and companies that are going to shape the future by investing in Arix.
Excellent stuff, Nassim. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is the author of a book entitled The Crypto Trader. There's only one, The Crypto Trader. Welcome,
that's
Glenn.
That's me. Yeah, great to be here.
Pretty odd. Today, there's a second day's rally. It's happened last week as well, actually, until the figures sort of came out in America, the jobless figures, which are horrendous. But we're seeing here, yesterday's figures is plateauing, it looked like, in several countries. Now France back up, and America's actually back up yesterday. But and I did a video on the weekend about the medical fallout here and the financial fallout. And I said, markets generally don't care about deaths. If a company can keep earning its earnings, the share price will keep rising. You know, if they keep growing their earnings, it's fine. Don't care if all the people in that company die. If it's automated and it keeps generating cash, it doesn't matter. Now, what the big deal is, you know, that markets are based on valuations, and those valuations are based off profit and earnings. So when those are impaired, that's when we see the problem. We haven't yet seen any quarter one sort of reports coming out. We've seen people warn against what's coming, but we haven't seen it. So we haven't had the financial fallout. People are thinking, this is it. Well, that's it. We saw the drop. We're back on now, back into a bull market. And I'm thinking, whoa, this is a phenomenal bear market rally, you know, because we've had a phenomenal drop. So yeah. I'm just saying to people, be careful here, because I don't think we've seen the full impact. We're getting horrendous figures coming out, and that will drag the economy slower for a long time, you know? So
I'm inclined to agree with you. You may remember last week on this very same podcast, I talked about how, I mean, already the market had been rising for a while, but I was expecting more based on the kind of the bottoming pattern that it had made on the chart. You know, it was a convincing bottoming pattern, a head and shoulders bottom, if you want to get silly and technical about it, but that's how charty people tend to describe it. You know, it was the kind of pattern that you see at a bottom which tends to be significant, right? But nonetheless, I'm still with you in the corner of thinking that this is a bear market rally, but a significant enough one for me to jump on board. So
yeah.
I did, you know, I talked about this last week that I jumped on board and I've been making some money out of it. But nonetheless, my finger is poised over the trigger to close all kind of long trades and get out of stocks as soon as things start turning downwards again. But looking at the markets this morning and the S&P futures before the as we speak, the US market hasn't opened yet. It's still looking very positive, though. So there could be a fair bit further to go, as I suggested last week, before this bear market rally is over. And as you say, maybe the earnings season will be the trigger to send everybody all negative again. But isn't everybody just expecting negative earnings anyway, though? So it won't be a surprise. It won't be a shock to the market.
That's what I've heard a lot of people say. But you don't know the depths of these. The depths of these earnings could be truly horrific. You know, I'm looking at an article here. In fact, look at my Twitter feed there. I posted out a chart earlier, and I did a video based on this, basically, saying the medical fallout isn't as bad as the financial fallout. We haven't had that yet. We're still piling on the... I mean, you know, we've seen now... in 2 weeks, more unemployed or jobless claims in America than it was in 2 years. We've had people saying, like Britain, Deutsche Bank says this is going to be the worst recession for a century. You've got second quarter estimates there of a drop. The best is a drop of 9%. Now, there's a company called, there's 20 companies here, analysts, look at this, and it goes up to 50%. So people don't know, and so I don't see how anyone can say they're pricing these things. We don't know. We haven't seen any financial sort of results yet from any big companies, and of course we're going to have a huge amount of debt from government debt to company debt, some of which will drag the economy even further. But when you get unemployment, you know, essentially your consumer, you know, the consuming goes down because there's less people can afford to buy stuff. So what happens is, more people, the producers don't produce as much, so they lay people off. And then the more people are unemployed, less people buying stuff. And then the producers lay people off. And so you've got this downward spiral. And when you get a certain level, a tipping point of unemployed above a certain percentage, it really, you know, it's hard to get out of. And that's why the government will need to put that. That's why they're pumping, you know, record amounts in, because they're worried about going into depression here. They're worried about a 1930s style, you know, 10 years of a bear market, pretty much going nowhere, of stagnation and going lower, maybe. So that's what's worried. But yeah, but look at that chart I pumped out, and it's based on that thing. And I said we'll have a rally here on the plateau. It's happened a bit quicker than I thought. I thought it happened sort of mid-April, which is what, next week. But a rally on a plateau in the death figures, which seemed to have happened yesterday, but it's not now. They've gone back up, and then we'll have lockdown, which will be a rally again, and then we'll start having the true cost of this lockdown. Coming out through the corporations, through banks, through governments, unemployment figures, and then that's when we'll have this. Because this is, listen, by any stretch of the imagination, someone said, no, that's it now, it's probably bouncing now, you've probably seen the bottom. I said, listen, if you look at the average bear market, the average, it lasts for a year, 347 days, something, and it drops 36%. We aren't there. We're nowhere there. We're 40 days in, and we're 26% down? How is it? This is not average. This is, people have said, lots of people are saying this is worse than the financial crisis of 2007-9. So how can we be less than average, but people are saying it's the worst recession in a century? I don't understand. There's a mismatch here. So either this is a bear market rally, or for some reason, you know, you can't apply the last 21 bear markets rules to this one. So I don't understand. What stacks up more in my mind is that the fact is, I don't think we've seen the bottom yet. That's what I'm thinking, you know?
I don't know. I'm tempted to utter the immortal words, this time it's different, which it never is. It's always, it's never different. But I think maybe this is really is different, isn't it? The coronavirus, drop in the stock market.
I know what you're going to say, though. I know what you're going to say.
Economic activity. It is unprecedented, and it's unlike any recession / depression that we've ever seen before for centuries at the very least, possibly ever in the history of the world. So the question is, will the markets react differently this time? I mean, we talked about last time, we argued about whether or not, because I was saying maybe when we're all allowed out our houses, everybody will get all excited and go on holiday. And, you know, suddenly industries will burst back to life because there's all this repressed demand. There's all this money kind of waiting to be spent, which is unlike any normal recession slash depression situation. You know, the what do you call it? The what do you call it when everybody in the business world gets all excited and start animal spirits? That's the phrase I was searching for. The animal spirits, which usually disappear during a recession, and then the kind of vicious circle feeds on itself because everybody's feeling all down about everything. That might not come into play this time because, as I say, once everybody's allowed out their houses, the animal spirits might burst back to life. I mean, it's really a psychological question more than anything else, I think.
Yeah, but people said to me, well, it's just a shutdown and start back up, but it's not. As I said, this was a recession was predicted pretty much in the back end of 2020 last year. This is without this. I mean,
everybody always predicts a recession every year.
But not on the three months, 10 years sort of inverted yield curve. That doesn't happen very often. That happened last summer, and everyone sort of said, and people couldn't see it at the time. What are you talking about? And then it sold off, and the markets came back, and everyone thought, no, hang on, it's fine now, it's fine. But global growth was slowing down every year. Pretty much, they've been revising global growth down. So it's going to get to the stage where, and when you got the stock market at an all time high, it doesn't scan. Again, you've got a disjoint between the real economics and the stock market. And that's happening right now in this rally. But like I said, they're looking now, if we do have a lifting of the lockdown, it'll be gradual, you know? It won't be just all out because we'll have a second
wave.
We'd have a second wave of this of a contagion. And then we'll go all back in. All back in, as you mentioned that. All out. And that's the last thing they want, is to let people out of their houses and flats and then say, oh, hang on a sec, no, you've caught it again. Back in again, because people will not like that. So they've got to make sure it's gone in some way, or they have some kind of... Because they're not going to get a vaccine for like 12 months, you know? There's obviously...
So foreign holidays may be out for the question for a while. According to Luke Johnson in the Sunday Times, and he knows his stuff about businesses, obviously having run many of them, he was basically saying that the travel industry will be, I don't want to paraphrase it, but in very, very deep trouble was the implication if... people aren't allowed to go on holidays this summer. And let's face it, what are the chances that people are going to be allowed to go on holidays this summer? It's very slim, I think.
This summer, definitely not. I mean, I've got a holiday booked, but I mean, like I said, the only way through this, and I can see this, to get the, and I've said this before, the only way to get the economy running again is to get these, as yet, I know they're not reliable, but these antibody tests, so when you can only after someone's had it for a while and they've got a bit of immunity, you get a, sort of maybe a tattoo stamped on your head saying, I've got immunity, and then you're free to travel around, you know, freely. I don't know how you do it, maybe I have an immunity passport or some kind of thing like this. I don't know how they do it. Maybe you get a smart app or something, you know, a digital stamp saying, yeah, I'm immune to it, so you can travel, you know. Otherwise, if not, you've got to wear lots of layers of clothing and be segregated. But there's no other way. There's no other way, is there? How else are they going to stop it spreading? I mean, because we haven't got a vaccine. I don't know how they're going to, unless you've got immunity to it, I don't see how they're going to do it.
Oh, this is what Luke Johnson says. He says, if the West allows lockdown to stretch into the summer, the entire... travel industry and tourism industry is essentially insolvent. And travel and tourism is thought to be the world's largest industry. It's the biggest sector of all. He's saying sliding towards complete annihilation. He couldn't really use stronger words. Worrying, because he is one of the guys I respect most in the business world, having been there and seen it and done it all.
No, there's a lot there. But the thing is, what's worrying, like I said, at the moment, is we don't know. We do not know how deep this will go.
Need a professional weapon?
As yet, we still don't know, do we? That's the thing. It could be completely wipe out a lot of companies, or maybe they hang on in there, because it's never happened before. I said, we are in an untrodden path, where you've got companies that are used to turning over billions and earning lots of money. Now, earning nothing. You know, you got the easy jets, Greggs of the world. They're not earning any revenue whatsoever. It's like, when has this ever happened before? Never. It's nuts. So,
but also, of course, we'll have the problem of once things do get moving again, there will be loads of zombie companies kept alive by government largesse, and nothing much else besides. There will be a lot of companies that have kind of got addicted to government handouts. Companies that don't deserve to survive, and they will be a drag on the economy for as long as the government decides to kind of help and support them. And this, and it is a real problem, because do we really think that the government is kind of efficient enough to sift through the business papers of every significant company in this entire country and decide which ones deserve to survive and which ones would have gone bust anyway? Because that's really what they would need to be doing in an ideal world, but they ain't going to do that. Are they? They'll just keep everything alive. And that means a lot of bad businesses will continue existing far longer than they deserve to. And that will be a big drag on growth. So that we should take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, no, I think what's going to happen there, I mean, already apparently there are businesses struggling to get loans, you know. I mean, there's been 100,000, was it, where was this? I don't know if this is America or US figure. I think it's UK figures. There was 100,000 applications. So far, 1,000 have been granted. And that's because the problem is, governments stand behind 80% of the debt. The 20% of debt, the business has to stand behind. And so they have to give up some kind of personal guarantee. And some of them don't want to, or they're saying, well, I don't know how the business is going to be. It was starting to get worse before this came along. And now afterwards, I don't know if there's a business there. So do I want to take out debt on our businesses decline? So something may just get a load of administrations happening, and then people just start again with just themselves or, you know, one or two employees rather than 10, you know. So we don't know where it's going, you know, but there we go. How's Bitcoin looking at the moment?
Bitcoin's looking very good. I'm back in Bitcoin now.
Woo.
It had a bit of a breakout, but the problem is, God, there's always a problem these days, isn't there? Yeah. Nothing's ever straightforward.
No. Exactly. Why can't someone just say, right, put your money here, earn £1 million. Okay, done. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. It's never that simple, I know, yeah.
But the problem right now is that whilst Bitcoin is in a short-term uptrend and has been for about a month now, well, just under a month, because it plummeted a month ago, of course, like everything did, it plummeted. And then it's been slowly recovering ever since. So a month into this uptrend, you have to start taking it seriously, because it's been quite relentless. And it had a nice breakout on the charts. So I'm back in Bitcoin. But once again, my fingers on the trigger, ready to possibly get out of it if it starts looking weak again, because I don't really trust this uptrend, because the uptrend looks fantastic if you're looking, say, at an hourly chart. But if you zoom out and look at a daily chart, it still looks pretty grim.
Yeah.
You know, because there was such a big fall last month.
On a daily, it's very funny. I mean, it's obviously that massive, how did it feel? 39% on the 12th of March. And then it spiked down as well. But then next day it spiked down lower, then came back up. And it's in fact, the open was exactly where the close was, but it spiked back down, came back up, then went up a bit, then came across. But it's gradually going high, set a series of higher lows, but there's something uniform about that I don't like. You know, something that's scary about it. Like all of a sudden it could drop off again, like the last time, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely could. I mean, well, to me, I don't want, if you don't get a really clear kind of recognizable historical pattern on a chart, then I don't really like to start declaring, well, I think it looks a bit like a triangle, or I think it looks a bit like a rectangle, because the human mind could easily fool itself into seeing things in charts that aren't there. So unless a pattern is nice and clear, I try not to try and guess what it is. But let's face it, it is kind of gradually climbing up in a kind of staircase type fashion, which is not usually the best kind of climb. It's usually a kind of bear market climb, that kind of pattern.
And so when you say
it could have another big drop, I think it's, you know, it has that kind of pattern that tends to presage a drop. So as I say, I'm ready to get out of Bitcoin if need be.
Yeah, and it's,
but I'm making money in it so far, so can't complain.
Yeah. Well, this market, you know, traders, you've got to be flexible as you are, traders, you know, and that's a good thing, because as an investor, I'm literally, I hold about 20% of my portfolio is in stocks, the rest is in cash, or a bit more than that, 22-23%. But I mean, the rest is in cash. I'm just sitting and waiting, because I'm until something I'm sure of, you know, we're hit a bottom here, and I'm not sure. I just think we haven't had the financial fallout, so I don't want to start diving in on these rallies and then all of a sudden see another 10-20% drop in the markets, or even 30%. It could be if it's the worst recession. Doesn't sound. Peter says the worst recession in the century, like I said, but yet the market at the moment hasn't shown me that. So I'm not sure. When in doubt, stay out. When in doubt, stay out as an investor, because I wait until it gets a bit more playable, more recognisable, because it's just all over the place at the moment.
Now, what about gold as well? Because I've been in and out of gold, and I'm in and out. Just in the past day, I've been in and out of gold and back in. The thing about gold is that it's, everybody's thinking, and this is another thing that worries me, when everybody's thinking the same thing, but I just keep reading everywhere, there's this new kind of consensus that because the Fed is pumping so much money, well, because all central banks are pumping so much money into economies, that will be inflationary, and gold is the perfect safe place to put your money, supposedly, is the perfect hedge. So the gold price has been rising. Gold is now in an upward trend, and that's why I've been in it a fair bit. But it, as I say, it gives me pause that everybody is buying the same story, which is never a good sign.
No, it's not. And to me, I mean, the fact that we have a rally in gold, first of all, suggests, obviously, I read a report yesterday, so the Fed, apparently, is increasing its balance sheet by $1 million a second.
So yeah, that sounds about right.
So buying bonds and all that stuff, and it's a ridiculous amount. So that's why, and of course, buys these bonds off pretty much insurance companies, pension companies, who buy going the market then with cash. They've cash, they've gone in the market. That's why the market's a bit rising. It's liquidity is there. That explains what gold is rising. But gold doesn't rise in good times, pretty much, does it? So the fact that it's at a 7-year high says something, and so that's a bit of a worry as well. Yeah, I think if in doubt, sometimes, unless you're a trader, if you're quite nimble, in and out, I'm not good at trading really, unless you're in and out, I think as an investor, be wary at the moment. Things not.
Yeah, exactly.
Much.
If you're a long-term investor, like many of your listeners are, this is the trickiest time of all because the volatility is so huge.
It's about getting a good price. At the moment, first of all, you don't know if you're basing valuations on price versus earnings. Price earnings multiple. First of all, the price is going all over the place. It's very volatile because no one knows what the E is in the PE. No one knows what the earnings are going to be. So how can you value
probably negative in many cases.
Yeah, exactly. So how can you value a company when they've got a negative E? Until we get some clarification on what these companies are worth or what they're churning out, and it's almost you've got to see through this year and think, right, forget 2020. What are they going to be earning in 2021? And then sort of base it off that,
But even that is impossible to guess because it's just impossible to be a value investor right now. From the word go, from the moment the coronavirus started spreading outside China and we were talking about it on this podcast, I was saying valuations of the stock market really needed to be a lot lower. And the main reason is because even though the E in earnings, which is historical, because they only report it a couple of times a year or whatever, and it still looks healthy on the historical reports, but of course we have to look forward. And when you look forward, as soon as coronavirus had come outside China, it was obvious that a lot of companies were going to suffer quite badly. And now, of course, we know that a lot of companies are going to, their earnings are going to vanish altogether. So you can't be a value investor basing things on valuations like price earnings, on multiples like that, because they don't exist anymore. They're probably, PE probably won't even be a number for many, or not a positive number for many, many companies now. Mm. And so you can't even look forward to 2021 because we don't know how much the lock, will there still be any kind of a lockdown? And as you quite rightly point out, will the economy have recovered, or will we have a load of companies that are still suffering? Will we have these zombie companies that I mentioned? I don't think anybody can possibly predict for any company, large or small, even the ballpark where earnings will be in 2021. So what I'm saying is value investing is basically impossible right now.
Yeah, yeah. And, I think we're going to live in a slow growth economy for a while. It's not going to just snap back to where it was. So, it'll build back up.
I think it might.
How can it, though? It can't. You were talking about the initial week when people get out of their houses and go to the pub and restaurants and cinema. Yes. But
Let me just finish a second.
When you have double the employment, probably even more than that, of what you had when you first went into lockdown, there's going to be a lot fewer people who can afford to go out and spend for a consistent period of time. So they won't be able to go out and have their monthly, eating out or a cinema or whatever, because they can't afford it. They can't
have a job. Well, they've got the government handouts, which are more generous than they used to be.
That's 80% of what you would earn. And that some people, like I said, are living week by week, aren't they?
Yeah.
A lot of people, in fact, it's scary. There's a reporter saying most people don't have savings for 6 weeks, So if they went in lockdown, they'd basically go broke. They'd be starving within 6 weeks, which is a worry. So, and that's the majority of people. So, I don't think people will go
Certainly
crazy.
People in developing countries, places like India, there are going to be a lot of people.
Well, even less than that, day by day. But listen, the thing is, it's been known, when sentiment down, everyone is worrying in an economy, right, then people don't go out spending, they just tend to tighten their belt, and so it exacerbates the situation, doesn't it? Everyone tightens their belt, everyone starts to worry, everyone starts spending, and almost that sentiment, the economy, locks the economy down even further. When people should be spending to encourage the economy, it doesn't happen because people are worried. So when people are worried, it just makes it worse. And that's the problem, I think. People will edge out of their houses, maybe go quickly for a drink or stuff, but hang on, it could still be there. My job may not be there around the corner in a bit. And that worry, just that's all invasive, enveloping worry about the economy stops people spending. That's the worry, I don't think we'll spend like crazy for the next 3 months.
I think it'll be I don't know. I feel it's just so impossible to predict. I mean, what you say is probably going to be the case.
Okay, at this time next week.
I just don't think it's definitely going to be the case. Because the thing is that, everything's been turning on a dime, as they say.
Yeah.
Can you not imagine a situation where lockdown ends and the whole kind of national temperament changes, people are unemployed, but they quickly find jobs because people are quickly setting up new businesses, which is very easy to do in this country, of course.
But when you've lost, the employment's doubled, you don't really get those people back into these startups straight away. First of all, banks will have a lot more debt on their books because they're loaning out things. They're not going to want to lend. It's been a worrying economy.
The government will encourage them in every possible way.
Also, the government will be more than up their eyeballs now in debt, so they can't just go...
Yeah, but they're not worrying about that. Not in the foreseeable future. The government will just spend. They'll do anything.
Put it this way, we will be in a recession. We're in a recession pretty much already. All right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
And recession tends to make people worry. And just the thought of getting, people are drinking in the houses anyway, but people won't go out partying for months and start setting up businesses everywhere. It'll take a while. It always takes a while. Every recession we have takes a while. Everything just snaps back.
As I said, this time this might be different. This is the weirdest situation any of us have ever been in.
No, we were in a recession before.
It's not normal. It's not like a normal recession.
Go back in the summer, right? The inversion, there's a 51% chance of a recession because that yield curve inverted. Gold was rallying. Earnings was going down, yet the stock market was an all-time high. There's a very good chance stock market's going to sell off in 2020. We're at 11-year bull market. It's ridiculous. So all the figures, all the sort of flat red flags are there. This came along as well on top of it.
I didn't buy that. You see, the red flags have been there for the past decade.
No, they haven't. They're inverted.
The yield curve is just one of many indicators.
It's the most reliable indicator.
No, the most reliable indicator is U.S. unemployment figures, and they were doing
okay. It's a lag. It's a lag. It's always a lag. Look at the figures. In 2007, they were still taking on people, and unemployment figures lagged. It's a lag figure.
It's a lag figure because it comes
out after... Yield curve predicts it. Yield curve predicts it. 18
months. Yield curve is not a real...
18 months ahead. The unemployment figures are a lag factor indicator. They're not a predictor.
They're a predictor of stock market moves. They really are.
They really aren't. Go back to 2007 and look at it.
I'll get your graph.
If you look at the Fed, or the Fred actually, and go along and see the the grey lines for recession figures, you'll see unemployment starts to dip in the middle of the recession, pretty much. Because once Q2 comes out, the two quarters of contracted growth, then people start worrying, start tightening their belts. It's a very sort of lag factor. Honestly, it's lagged all the time. It's not a good... I get Russ Mould on here, he's an investment director at Stockbroker, and he says, don't forget, every time he says that, unemployment is a lagging factor in every recession.
Yeah. Unemployment, of course, is a lagging factor. But the point is, when US unemployment figures start to turn... I think we mentioned this last week, didn't we? Whenever the trend of US unemployment figures goes from unemployment decreasing to unemployment increasing, when you get that kind of inversion, that is a predictive factor for stock markets. Okay, yeah, whether or not it's a predictor for recession is neither here nor there. Right, in terms of stock markets, it's a predictive factor. It works.
Listen now. So next
week,
look at
it on
Bitcoin. One question: Bitcoin
works.
Next week, will it be higher than lower than where we are right now? Just say higher or lower. Gotta go.
I don't make stupid predictions like that. Put it this way: if it's higher, I'll still be in Bitcoin and making even more money. If it's lower, then I will have got
just
out
say,
of Bitcoin.
Just say, just relax. Just say higher or lower. Just say higher or lower. Higher or lower.
I don't know. You can't say higher or lower. I'm not a gambler.
I'm saying lower.
A trader. It's a very different thing.
It's exactly the same thing.
It's a very different thing.
It's spot on exactly the same thing.
The point is, a good trader wins either way. A gambler just only wins if the market goes one way and then loses if it goes the other way. Whereas I'm intending to win either way. That's good trading.
So you won't say it then? No, higher or lower?
No, because I don't know. I don't know what the market's going to be at this time next week. That's a ridiculous question. Okay. Nobody knows the answer to that. Let's be honest. Nobody in the world knows the answer to that question.
Right, gonna go, Glenn. It's going to be lower. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. EasyJet, up 20%. I did buy some of those on Friday. I didn't expect the rally to happen so quickly. This has been a heck of a... I do talk about this, actually, in my weekend video about... I call it the sort of death plateau relief rally, where we'll see a relief rally towards... Because death sort of went down yesterday due to coronavirus. And we've had a bit of a rally here, but it's been a very strong rally. But this will plateau out. I think it should carry on towards the lift down, I think. Lift down. But then we'll have the financial fallout, which will be bigger. Of an impact, I believe, and probably ticks into recession. N Brown at four is 62% up, 23.93. At three, the Ince Group, 138.50. At two, non-mover by the way, Ince Group, is 88 Energy, down 71% to 0.31 pence. And at one, Calco, down 5.4% to 7 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Avation. Trading statement. At four, Tertiary Minerals. Pyramid Gold project update. At three, Pembridge Resources. Reduction in CEO salary. At two, Cora Gold. Newsletter to shareholders. And number one, Bidstack Group. UK's government stay-at-home lives campaign. And stay-at-home saves lives campaign. And that was well publicised yesterday. Bidstack's tech, of course, is helping put that into the games of Dirt Rally, which is Codemasters and other games. And it was well publicised. Campaign is on BBC technology site, so well done there to Bidstack. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.